It's Monday, July 16th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 61 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Adam.
And they're still trying to screw with you guys.
And he's trying to screw with you.
John may be selling himself short by pretending to be Adam.
Why?
Because,
well,
John...
beside the obvious reason that I'm John and he's Adam.
Well, but there's the less obvious reason, at least to our non-forum users, that John now has a one-woman fan club.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That John,
Mrs. White.
Yes, John's got a cougar that's chasing him down.
I might just let myself get caught. I don't know.
Our forum user Tim...
You're such a tease.
Our forum user Tim White has told us that his wife has some sort of a pod crush. If that's even that's the word he
it
used
is now.
For it. Yeah, it's a word now.
Oh, nice. All I have is chaos.
That on John, and that he even was trying to show things to, you know, defray this crush. That, well, what about this and what about that? And it just made it worse.
She thought, or he thought he'd pour water on the fire by showing my pictures, and instead he poured gasoline.
Right. And then Francis pitched in there and helped out by explaining that you're on your way to becoming a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that put that right out.
Success usually drives women away.
Yeah, it does.
And money.
So, John, by pretending to be Adam, you're actually giving up on your fans.
I doubt that. She knows.
We are releasing the episode this week on Monday instead of Wednesday for a very specific reason, which is that today, July 16th, is the beginning of the voting for the Any Awards, which are the Independent Gaming Awards. And we, Fear the Boot, are one of five podcasts that has been nominated for the Best Gaming Podcast. We want you guys to go out there and vote for us. And you can find the voting site at anyawards.com. That's E-N-N-I-E, awards, A-W-A-R-D-S, all one word, .com. And voting is going to run from July 16th through July 29th. And the way that it works is you are allowed one vote per IP. So if you've got a home computer or a computer, you know, whatever, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But it's going to run from now until July 29th, with the awards being given at Gen Con. And of course, we will also put this address in the show notes and on the forum if you want to catch it there. Winning this award would obviously be kind of cool for us. So if you have enjoyed this podcast at all, then please get out there and show us much love and vote for us. And you know what? Even if you, whatever, don't want to vote for us, hey, at least just get out there and vote and make your voice heard, because the other four podcasts that are on that list, they're great shows as well, who have certainly earned their place there too. So we, of course, just like they want you to vote for them, we want you to vote for us. But, you know, hey, get out there and at least vote. But speaking of voting, let's get down to voting that really matters.
To it.
National awards do not compare to international competitions for obscene power.
I think this is intergalactic competition.
Perhaps.
Oh, my word.
The Power 16. We have just completed another round. We are now going into the second to last round. Now, normally these votes open on Wednesday, but because of the fact that we are releasing this episode on Monday, I will open the voting today on Monday. And so you're going to have two extra days to get your vote in. This is the second to last round. You are deciding now which two people will go to that final clash to become the number one in the Power 16.
It's the final countdown.
What an honor that will be.
But to get there, first, we have to deal with the losers.
All right.
So
give me the first competition.
Here we go. It's like waiting in line at Old Country Buffet. To get the good stuff, you got to wade past the losers. So, Well Giant versus the Demon Gnome with the magic staff. Anyone want to guess?
I'm saying it's the Demon Gnome.
I'm going to say Well Giant.
I'm hoping Demon Gnome. That's
just to be contrary.
For.
Demon Gnome, almost 3-1.
It.
It is a landslide, 63-175. Demon Gnome stomped the Well Giant.
Go, Demon Gnome.
All right. Batman versus Hardgay.
Batman.
Batman is correct. Batman 141 to Hardgay's 98.
A little closer.
All right. This is our second closest match. Second closest matchup. Christopher Walken versus Vin Diesel.
Christopher Walken.
Vin Diesel. Walken.
It is Vin Diesel.
Okay.
128-108.
I'm remaining 3-3.
He won by 20. Now, here's
Walken had my vote.
Here's the one everybody's watching. Here's the one they're putting $1 million stakes on in Vegas. Phil versus Baron Von Badass. And I'm going to tell you right now, the difference between the two is 6 votes.
Oh, my God.
6 votes. Phil versus Baron Von Badass.
Let's scale this. Out of how many total votes?
Out of a total of 238.
Wow. Okay.
The 6-vote difference. All right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is very cool. So good showing to both. Phil versus Baron Von Badass. Who do you guys think won?
I think Phil won. I already know I'm not going to guess.
Adam already knows. I've already told him.
I think Phil probably won.
The answer is Phil has lost. Baron Von Badass goes on to the next round.
Phil lost.
Yesterday at work, I got the IM. Dude, I'm going to tell you something. And you cannot tell anyone. Phil has lost. And I was like, oh my God. And then he's like, Phil just IM'd me. And he wants to know if he won. And I can't lie to him anymore.
Yeah, and I have this thing where it's like, I won't lie to people. So it's like, well, I got to face up to the truth. I got to fess up and take responsibility. So
responsibility for other people's votes.
I finally broke it to Phil. I said, Phil, I'm sorry to tell you, it was a 6-vote difference, which I believe may be the closest we've had yet in terms of percentage.
Phil, you could have got one gaming group to vote for you and shifted the tie.
You know what the sad thing is?
What's
is that? I didn't even vote in this competition.
I didn't think we were supposed
and
to. We're hosts.
No, we could vote.
No, we can vote.
And Phil, last I heard, was absolutely heartbroken. He was devastated. So you 6 people that made the difference are absolute bastards. And last I heard, he has filled up his dirigible with imagination and has flown away to a land where all there are guns. And that is the last that we may ever hear Phil again, unless we decide to release another bonus episode with Phil, in which case you'll hear more from Phil.
But when he was happy.
He'll be back from the gray havens of Smith and Wesson eventually.
Yes. Right now he's crushed. He's seeking counseling, and you guys at home should feel terrible for what you've done. You know, actually though, I may not be able to blame you because the Baron, given his cheating powers and his game master favoritism,
he is the ultimate in
actually is quite possible that Phil got 1,000 votes and the Baron got 0. But some game master over whatever game this may be, like, I guess
the game of existence,
God, maybe, I don't know, just came in and changed the numbers so that the Baron won anyway, just because that's what the Baron's all about. So you guys need to vote because we are now down to our last set of matches. We are picking the final two to go into that epic battle. 2 cheesy characters enter, 1 cheesy character leaves. And we will have our most powerful of the power.
What are the
16.
Two matchups, Dan?
Our matchups are going to be, I believe, the Demon Gnome versus BVBA.
Oh.
And Batman versus Vin Diesel.
Oh man.
I'll tell you right now, I think I know who's going to win both.
I think
the
I do
first
too.
One's really? A no-brainer.
I think I know who's going to win both. And in fact, I think I know.
The first one's easy. I think the second one is
I think I know who's going to take this competition. But I will also, I will update the brackets if you're taking your own office pools or whatever, then, or if you've got money on this in Vegas,
you know, yeah, the Vegas,
I will update the brackets and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So you guys can go out there and see the graphical representation of how the Power 16 has unfolded.
Ooh, maybe I'll be a bookie for these.
Really?
Sure.
It's not legal in Missouri, but that's not stopped us from doing other things. So.
Exactly. I don't have a problem.
If it gets profitable enough, they'll legalize it themselves.
That's true.
And then just tax you.
That's true. Yep. Actually, what we need to do is get the mafia involved. Once the mafia is involved, they'll just screw with all the legislation until we have everything we want. Just like with the river boats or somehow boats.
Yeah, boats and moats.
Harris,
yeah, boats
the river boat. The 12-story hotel.
Yeah. If you're in Missouri, there's all kinds of corruption going on surrounding our casinos, which is a great big shock to people everywhere. But nonetheless, let's move on to gaming-related things. We've got some meaty topics today, and the reason we have some meaty topics today is because this is the episode in which we bear farewell to Mike. The conviction went through, I believe, unless the governor speaks up on his behalf at midnight next week, Tuesday. That's it for Mike.
Close. I'm having twins, actually. And
this is worse than I thought. I thought he was just getting killed.
I'm having twins, and
you personally?
Yes, me personally. I'm personally pregnant.
Man,
twins.
You hide it pretty good.
Yeah.
This is no, like you that don't. This is like that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Right.
Junior. I saw it.
I'm sorry. I didn't.
You anyway, should. It's great. Continue, Mike.
So anyway, we're past the first trimester, and she is supposed to be taking it easy, and I'm having to step up more. Plus, there's lots of doctor's visits and stuff because of the high risk of the pregnancy. So I'm very indisposed with family functions. And so Fear the Boot.
Family functions and biological functions. So
and well, family yeah. biological functions.
Right, exactly. Yes. The household dumps.
So once all this settles down, if there's still a slot available, I may come back if these guys will have me. But for right now, I need to bow out.
All right. And if there's a slot available, you may be having another baby. So
well, there's two.
What we are going to talk about here when we get to the really big meaty subject, we got one little thing we're going to hit on the way, one speed bump on the road of life, is Mike has unique expertise that we want to take advantage of just in case the governor does not pardon him from the twins. And that unique expertise is Mike is a trained psychological counselor.
Yeah.
And Mike, do you real quick want to give your credentials there just so when we get to that subject, people know why they should listen to you rather than bombarding us with their semi-informed opinions?
I have a master's degree in clinical psychology, and I'm a provisionally licensed professional counselor in the state of Missouri.
Okay.
And, but I read Wikipedia.
And
if this is a counselor, Mike, where's the ambassador?
and what, can you give us just a list real quick of some of your current and past jobs in the field of psychology?
I don't want to give too many specifics, but I will say that I work for the department, a contractor for the Department of Mental Health in the state of Missouri. And I work with children right now and have for the past 3 years.
And previous to that, you worked for the
a different contractor for the Department of Mental Health.
Right. Well, you also worked, you worked in the mental ward of a hospital.
I've worked in several hospitals. I've worked in civil hospitals, and I worked briefly in a forensic hospital.
Yeah, I'll say the forensic hospital. Explain that one real quick, because this one's important to the RPG angle.
Okay. A forensic hospital is a place where basically if you are... if a judge determines that you're not guilty by reason of insanity or unfit to stand trial due to your psychiatric condition, you're sent to a forensic hospital instead of prison or
right.
jail.
So we're talking about he dealt with the criminally insane, okay? So erase the comic bookiness. He worked in Arkham Asylum. So Mike has quite a range of perspectives and informed perspectives on psychology as it relates to role-playing games. And we've got several angles we're going to tackle that from. And actually, to me, this episode, I see this as a sister episode to our religion and RPG topic. That, and we'll, you'll see why when we get there. But I see this as a sister episode. But before we get there, Adam, you had a subject that you wanted us to pound into the ground.
Yes, I did. Something that we've all come across in the years we've been gaming. Starting the game. All the prep work that goes into it, in particular, selecting the game.
I would say
selecting the game.
Oh, that can be a challenge.
Prepping a game is a Ray Harryhausen hydra of many stop motion heads that there are so much that goes into game preparation. Picking the group, figuring out who to include and who to exclude, figuring out where to hold the game.
What night, time,
all
how
that.
How long are we going to game?
Right. But. So Adam specifically...
Waffle House or Eat Right.
Right. Waffle House or Eat Right. And Adam, you want to take this from the angle of picking which game.
Yes. How does one go about picking a game for a group?
All right. So how does one go about picking a game?
Pac-Man contest.
We whine and argue and hash it out until somebody eventually backs down.
We drink until oblivion. The last person standing tells everybody else who passed out, yeah, you all agree to this game I want to play.
It explains why we play Battletech all the time, because Adam and I are the ones that pick.
Okay, so both the suggestions we've heard so far are variations on the theme of strong arming.
Yes,
that basically
pretty much.
You just push and push and push, and eventually, you know, humans being pack creatures in nature, eventually someone will submit and someone will dominate and you get a game choice.
I have a better idea. You all decide who the GM is going to be, and then the GM belts it out.
That happens.
And that's what it is.
GMs will say.
Because when I'm the GM, that's how it goes.
You know, yeah. I will say that right there is that's not the way we always do it. But in terms of giving a real answer, letting the GM pick is an important one for one simple reason. The players have to be interested in the game. They have to believe in the game. They have to be excited about their character. But fundamentally, when you really boil it down, all they have to do on a week-to-week basis is show up and not be a jackass. Whereas the Game Master...
That sounds trivial. Some people can't do it. But
yeah.
Continue, Dan.
But the Game Master has to show up every single week, excited about the game, plot in hand, plot created, ready to motivate people. When the players start dozing off, he's got to pull out something to get them back on track.
Combat!
Nazi zombie bugbears. The game master, more than anyone else at the table, must be excited about the game. So I personally, and this is because I'm a game master, have no problem with the let the game master pick model.
Even when I'm a player, I like to let the game master pick model, because if I have an unmotivated game master, the game's going to last about 15 minutes.
And with one exception, I think the game master picks is fine. If Dan, for example, is running a game for the people sitting around this table, and Dan says, I want to play some insert obnoxious game here that Mike doesn't want to play or John doesn't want to play, and if Mike or John wants to say, okay, well, then I'm out of that one because I really don't want to play.
Well, yeah, there has to be a little bit of consensus building. Yeah, politicking can be a little more subtle
than nobody cares if somebody backs out.
I mean, there has to be a general agreement, because if the game master wants to GM a game that nobody wants to play, the GM can't GM a game for no players.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, the difficulty there, and as a game master I'll tell you, is sometimes the players either, number one, don't understand quite what the game master is getting at. I'm going through this right now because we're trying to start up a game, and at least two or three of the ones in there are homebrews that the people that are playing don't know anything about. And so they can't make an educated guess saying, you know what, we've played this before and it was a lot of fun. They're just kind of, it's like taking a novel and reading the little blurb on the back and trying to decide if it's a good book. You know, you're not always going to hit right with that. And the second is, as Ryan Dancy pointed out, usually the game masters, just for whatever reason, are more willing or more interested in trying new games than the players are. So sometimes you kind of just have to, it's like moving a mule. You just got to put your back into it and force them along, because that's the only way you're going to get it anywhere.
I typically err on the side of the GM's decision, just because it's a professional courtesy.
I agree. We're not getting paid for it, but it's a professional
courtesy. Do you think that goes back to the fact that Chad's made you all GM at least at once?
Yes. So. I GM before I joined you guys, but yes. I think that if you are a sympathetic former or part-time GM, you'll be much more willing to say, all right, I really don't want to make the GM run Star Wars if he hates Star Wars, because it's going
to
suck.
This is one of the reasons why I've heard it argued that everyone in their life should have to work at least 3 months retail and 3 months restaurant.
I agree completely.
Because they will never be a jackass customer again if they have to actually stand on the other side of the counter and deal with themselves.
I'm not either. Yeah. I haven't worked actual live restaurant, but I have worked food service and I have worked retail.
I haven't. It sucks. Tip.
I've never done either, but I don't know. I guess I'm just a nice guy, I guess.
You get the asshat teenagers who put your tip in their soda when they leave.
That's, you know, actually, I know what it was. Growing up, being a gamer and a dork and all that, I took so much abuse as it is that I automatically have sympathy for anyone I encounter. And so when I walk into a McDonald's, I instantly feel sorry for the guy behind the counter, even if, you know, he's the most popular guy in school.
I feel sorry for him on a philosophical level.
Really?
Well, not any sort of sympathetic.
You didn't wait tables or anything, but you also heard a lot of the stories. You heard about me getting fired because that table stood me up and all that kind of stuff. So you heard a lot about that.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. I did hear about some of these stories. So I guess I built some sympathy through that.
You have to quell the beast inside you, Bruce Banner.
I quell the rage.
Banner.
You wouldn't like me when you don't tip. But the other method that we have found that works is voting.
Yeah, voting is when the GM doesn't really care.
And by voting,
is at least split between multiple systems.
Yeah, like you know, the game master says, okay, there's three games or two games or five games or whatever that I have ideas for, and I could run all these. And so you basically say to the players, let's say there's five games, rank these games from 1 to 5. And then what you do is you total them across, and the game that has the lowest number of points, since you're ranking from 1 to 5, that's the game that we're going to play. Or if people say, well, wait a minute, you know, I picked this one because it had magic in it, but, you know, the game that I picked, number 5, also has magic in it, can we do a second round of voting? You can do the parliamentary runoff thing if the vote's too close and have your top 2 or top 3 do a tiebreaker. But there's another great way we have found of selecting the game.
And that is divination chickens.
Ooh.
Ooh. I like it. The other way, of course, is rather than ranking them 1 to 5, is everyone just picks the game. And the game that gets the most votes wins.
Oh, okay.
More of a simple democracy rather than...
Yeah, so it could create a dangerous plurality, though, in which a split party,
right,
two people vote for D&D, and everyone
45 seconds of dead silence on a podcast.
That's true, too.
Exactly. And you know what? We've even seen that in American Democracy, where you get the vote spoiler, where you know, maybe people would have preferred a candidate of a conservative or liberal leaning, but you get a guy in there where it's like the two of them together, you know, would have created an interest that didn't actually come out.
So is this one of those, if you can't find the Ross Perot, Ralph Nader in the group, it's you situations?
Yeah, actually, okay. I guess more what I'm saying is that if to the fairness of the group, you may want to avoid the Ross Perot, Ralph Nader games wrecking the vote. And therefore, you may force
Mr. Nader voter to choose between one or the other of the two major.
You may be better off doing the runoff elections until finally you get some kind of a clear majority, where between the remaining games, people have definitely gone for game A versus game B. I think something else you've got to look at is the players involved. If you're trying to bring a new player into the group, or if you have an existing player who's a little bit skittish but feels more comfortable some games than others. Like in the game that we are about to run, we're still trying to decide, but I know that Carla wants to play, and there's some games she's more comfortable with than others. And on top of that, we are probably going to invite someone into the group that has never played an RPG before. So I know that it would be easier for him, since he's already trying to learn RPGs, if we picked a game setting that he can relate to and understand pretty quickly. I mean, like Star Wars, where everybody knows Star Wars. You know, you don't have to learn Star Wars. You just have to learn the D20 system or the D6 system that you're playing.
Or God help you, the concept of tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah, or the whole thing in general. But if you've been listening to Fear the Boot, even if you don't game, then you know. Yeah. And you post a lot on my forums, Chaos. But
I think another thing you have to look out
Chaos
for.
Chaos doesn't game?
No,
he doesn't.
He's a non-gamer.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Seriously.
He does not play
RPGs.
Wow
is the extent of his RPG experience.
Yeah, he does not play RPGs of any kind, yet like one of our top five posters on the floor.
He just surpassed me again.
Did he?
He's third.
I'm number one. Chad beat me there for a while, but I finally whooped his ass, and I'm back at number one again.
He's third.
Which is strange, because I've been so busy with work that I haven't been on the forums much. Shame on me for that. I've been more active lately, but for a while there, man, I was in a real famine. But
yeah, now that I work at a desk and an oops, this is going out publicly, isn't it? I've been posting more lately.
So
are you worried about your job?
No, here? No, not at all.
No.
That was a joke.
Okay, yeah. All right.
I can't imagine all the guys at the top of your law firm listening to Fear the Boot.
I do.
Well, they
really?
All do. But yeah.
Do they really?
Anyway, no. Back to the prep work. You actually interrupted me.
All right, fine.
What? Back to the prep work. This is something you need to keep your eye on, because if that too. But if this initial round of picking the game doesn't go well, you need to start looking for another group, because this game's not going to get off the ground.
Actually, yeah.
That's probably true. This is one of those early warning signs that if there's some sort of major issue about picking the game, then this is going poorly.
Fair issue, and I've seen this happen. If your group is either, one, fighting at this point, like they can't agree to the point that this is turning ugly, or secondly, they're forming camps where it's like, I want to play a sci-fi game and only a sci-fi game, and this group's, I want to play a hardcore fantasy and only a hardcore fantasy game, you're not.
I have a third disaster scenario. Those are both deaths by fire. There is also death by ice. If no one cares, get out, because the game is dead already.
Yeah, that too. If your players have no passion, it's probably time to boot up WoW, or in my case, Dawn of War.
I've seen that at least as much as I've seen camps break out.
And just wait for the people to reach a certain point of RPG withdrawal that they come back with a passion. But we already
did an episode
on that. So yeah, Snelson, just wait. It'll happen for you. But we did an episode on that already, so we won't rehash that ground. But we will hash new ground. Mike, psychology and role-playing games, and there's two angles that we are going to hit this from. The first is the one that I consider to be the sister topic to our religion and role-playing topic, where I want you to talk about the psychological impact of role-playing.
Oh, God.
That how does role-playing affect people? What kind of people tend to role-play? What does role-playing bring out? What does it encourage? What does it stifle? The second thing we are going to hit on is psychology as it is portrayed in role-playing games. For example, the Rift's Roll for Fear of Boats table. I want you to talk about that, because we've had people on our forums talk about playing characters that are schizophrenic. They have multiple personalities, and typically, just like comas or just like fist fighting, people tend to get those images from the popular media rather than from the way the conditions really work. So I would like to go down some of those conditions and talk about where they're right, where they're wrong, and how people can play those conditions accurately and still make a compelling character.
Well, your second topic will be fairly easy to do, but your first topic, I need to make sure we make this disclaimer now. Talking about how role-playing affects people psychologically, there's absolutely no literature on that, so this will be completely my opinion.
Okay.
This well, this show is fact.
Yeah.
Hard, okay. Yep, right. Wikipedia-based fact.
We dispense nothing but legal and medical advice on this show. Everything we say is backed by the...
I think both legal and medical advice at the same time.
Right, it is.
Did we just finish the last of our bar exams last week? I mean,
we did.
We are recognized by Missouri bar.
I am now licensed to practice law and medicine in all 50 states and Puerto Rico. And if you do not live in the U.S., I'm licensed there too. So, Mike, please.
Well, in that case,
very yes. Now that we've cleared Mike. And
now that we've all slapped down our credentials on the table.
Right, exactly. Mike, what in your mind does role-playing do to a person psychologically, positively or negatively?
I would say that there are certain types of people that are drawn to gaming, and I think that to some extent it depends on who you are when you come to the table. If you're someone who has a lot of self-esteem problems and not a very solid sense of identity and who you are and whatnot, I could see there being issues of fantasy becoming a problem for you. You know, you're role-playing these different characters that have powers and abilities that you obviously don't. Some people can get off on it, and that's where the hard-ass gaming stuff, I think, largely comes from, is that people get to pretend to be something that they're not, they never will be, but they wish they were.
Someone who's delusionally insane, what Chad in our our religion and role-playing episode is calling a black leaf based off the Jack Chick track, they're fairly easy to spot, okay? And I've got a question about the black leafs in a minute.
Okay.
But let's for a moment. Let's say that we have someone, or maybe even I myself am concerned that I am someone who has self-esteem or self-image issues that role-playing might complicate. How do you identify those and what do you do about them?
As a therapist or as a gamer?
Well, let's just say as a gamer. What would your advice be, once again, all seriousness, non-medical advice, just Mike pontification. What would your advice be to the man on the street? How do you identify someone like that and what can you do to stop role-playing from becoming a complicating factor for their other emotional issues?
Wow.
Wow. That would only make it worse.
Get help on your... They would need to get themselves some help on their own. I don't think you can do anything in the gaming to help them overcome the issue so that it doesn't become a problem for them. I think that needs to be done.
Would it be better to cut the person out of the group or keep them in the group?
Well, that gets into something I was actually thinking about on the way here when I knew that we were going to be talking about this subject. When you bring psychological problems into a game, it's kind of the opposite end of your question, I guess. What effect does gaming have on your psychology? I would more be interested in what effect does your psychology have on the game? And I would say that with some issues, they would be game breakers. To a large extent, it would be a matter of leave your issues at home, you know? As a therapist, of course, we're told to leave our baggage at the door. And, you know, the idea is we have to get our own stuff in check so that we're not aggravating the client's issues with the things that are going on with us. I would say to some extent, we need to do that with gaming as well, because if, for example, I'm in a bad mood and I have a lot of things going on, what effect does that have on the game?
Right. You act out character aggression, and that not only degrades the game, but also pisses off the people that are sitting at the table around you.
Right. If I'm depressed and I have absolutely no energy or interest in anything in the whole world, what effect is that going to have on the game?
Right.
So obviously all of these sorts of things are going to negatively impact the game. And the more severe the symptoms, the more severely they're going to affect the game.
Let's say you get someone like a black leaf who is completely delusionally nuts. I know they say that one of the things that's hardest for people like that, at least as far as I understand it, is to build social structures, to build social networks, to get and maintain friends. Is that correct? That's very hard for people that are genuinely psychotic or schizophrenic or whatever?
Well, I would say that is generally a problem for anyone who has severe issues in general, yeah.
I mean, think of that practically. Who wants to hang out with the crazy guy?
Right. When someone like that is in a game, is it better in your mind to remove that person from the game because the game is a complicating factor, or keep them involved in the game simply for the sake of keeping them socially interacting with people?
You're saying for the person or for the gaming group?
For the person themselves. Let's say for a moment, completely compassion here, complete charity for the person themselves, that we bring someone into our gaming group and they're basically nuts.
I would say it could go either way depending on what they've got going on. if you take a person who is legitimately psychotic and you put them into a role-playing game, you would run the risk of aggravating symptoms. On the flip, because I'm, well, seriously, just because if I, you know, if I have lots of weird issues that I can't tell fact from fiction and I'm sitting down in a role-playing game where I'm trying to pretend to be something I'm not in a world where I'm not, you could very easily aggravate symptoms.
Yeah, but every time we talk about this, I see the Black Leaf, the Black Leaf comic. And how I'm upset that my game master never pulled me aside to teach me real magic.
Though I would have preferred clerical magic to wizardly magic.
Yeah, I would too. I'd rather just live forever than shoot fireballs.
Right, or at least be able to walk around hospitals healing people, you know, so I don't know. Or what effect do you think gaming has on the individual psychologically? What pros and cons does it offer? Let's take this from the reverse angle. You could say, for example, that when you game, one of the things that I've heard said is that gaming is healthy because it forces you, assuming you role play and don't just dungeon crawl, but assuming you role play, it forces you to take on other roles and other perspectives, which maybe teaches you sympathy or empathy. Would you agree? Maybe explain. Would you?
Well, I mean, certain people, that's complicated because, well, for one thing, people tend to box themselves in with characters. I mean, we talk about that all the time on the show.
Right.
If I'm playing, you know, Stealth Ninja Man, no, I'm probably not going to be learning much about compassion because I'm only interested in being Stealth Ninja Man. If, however, I'm Mr. Hard-Ass Gamer and I have no perception of anything outside of my own mind and I'm being forced to play a cleric with no weapon, maybe, depending on the game, right. Maybe.
How do you think that the fact that most of the time when you create a character, you're just playing up an aspect of yourself plays into that?
I agree with that statement.
I think you are all of the time playing an aspect of yourself when you play an RPG character.
Well, I agree with that.
Right, but how do you think that affects it? I mean, if you're just playing up an aspect of yourself, you're not really learning to sympathize or empathize.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that fundamentally what sympathy and empathy is on some neurological or mental or whatever level that you are able to project yourself, okay, so your own experiences into somebody else, that if you hit your hand with a hammer, I can sympathize with the pain you're in because of the fact that I can take pain I have experienced and kind of project that onto it. Yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that by its nature?
Empathy is actually, you have specifically hit yourself with that hammer and you know because you were there.
Right, so I mean, sympathy and empathy by their very nature, they require you projecting some part of yourself into the equation. So I don't, once again, Mike, hop in here anywhere you please, but I would almost think that the fact you have to begin with yourself because you can't, by your very nature, you can't begin with anything but yourself when you play a role-playing game.
You can never get past the fact that you are playing the character.
Right. But nonetheless, would you agree that you can still try to play up aspects of the character that are maybe out of your...
Well, yeah, in games I've told you before, I generally try to find what I call a hook. I'll take one trait or characteristic of myself, put it in the character as like a major part of the character, and that I use kind of to get me into the character, and then around that I create things in the character that I don't necessarily have, or maybe I do in different amounts. Like I may have somebody with this particular quirk, or they may be nice in this way that I'm not nice, or whatever else.
Yeah. Right. But if we don't have them, we can at least imagine that we would. Because that's how you play a character.
Yeah. But there's always something about the character that I can relate to, or else how would I play it?
Right. Do you think there is some psychological dynamic to a role-playing group as a whole that is healthy? That simply sitting around a table with other people, happy to interact with them, does this offer something that maybe...
It's a vice. I think...
It's a vice?
Yeah. Well, here's what I mean. People cope with stress different ways. Some people go for a run. Some people go play golf. Some people toke up. Some people drink. I think role-playing offers a way to escape your troubles for a while because you're going into the fantasy realm, playing this character in this world that, you know, exists in your mind. You're forgetting about your troubles for a while, forgetting about your life for a while, and kind of getting away. So I think in that respect, it's a vice. It can be a coping mechanism.
Vice as in the opposite of a virtue.
Okay, fair enough. I may be misusing a word here, but I'm just saying it could be a coping mechanism. Then. A vice as in, I could be drinking or I could be role-playing.
Yeah, okay.
Do you think there's any advantage to role-playing versus other hobbies in that when you're role-playing, you're sitting around with a group of people, you're not out on the street, also on top of that, you're having to interact very closely and intimately with people. Whereas let's say like in a football game, you may be having fun together, but you're not really sitting around interacting with each other per se in this deep, you know, philosophical or conversational way. And I don't mean to sound like I'm leading you here with questions, but I'm just trying to feel out whether some of the, I guess some of the apologetic I've heard about role-playing games over the years is actually sound psychological truth or is just nice talking points for the people in our hobby.
Well, I would say, you know, you and I could go in my garage and work on cars or go down to my basement and build dollhouses. And that would be a constructive hobby where you and I could talk. I would say role-playing games tend to go into deeper areas and force us to talk more deeply than we might when if we were just working on cars or on dollhouses, because we tend to run into things in role-playing games that, depending, I guess, on the game, but we tend to run into things that evoke more emotional reactions and more kind of philosophical sorts of things.
Right. All right.
Which you could do if you were working on cars, but you don't necessarily do.
Let's move past this one to the one that I really want to clobber the hell out of.
You just want to talk about crazy people.
I do.
Well, this will be easier anyway. This first one. Woo. Yeah, that's this, pontification.
The way that psychology is represented, and we could say in fiction in general, but I'm going to say, let's just for now, let's keep it down to role-playing games in general. I want to talk about the ways they're portrayed wrong, and then I would like to try and give some advice with Mike's help on how to portray these conditions correctly if you're trying to play a character who is crazy in some fashion. So, Mike,
so long as I can do some damage control first, I'm okay with this.
All right, damage control. Okay. Go away.
The damage
Bring
control
the
thing
crazy.
Is, remember that too much information, a little information is dangerous.
Okay.
For the same reason Wikipedia can be a problem, this conversation could be problematic. If I go through and explain why some perceptions are wrong, people are suddenly going to be having the med student syndrome of, oh my God, I have that. Oh my God, I have that.
Right.
And you know, that's the sort of thing I don't want to have happen. Plus, I don't want everybody to listen to the podcast and suddenly be experts.
Right.
Well, thing that I would add on top of that is you can't shoot a lock out of a door with a gun. Okay. But it's entertaining in movies.
I don't know. Too I've never much. Tried.
No, I watched a Mythbusters on it the other day.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
So, you can kill a man with a tire. I saw that on Mythbusters, too.
That pleases Thank me you, in a way you can't possibly
no
imagine.
Problem. You'll be seeing that on episode 70, too. Yeah.
I think part of the allure of role-playing games, though, is that there is almost a mystique to the storytelling that, well, yes, like movies themselves aren't always entirely 100% accurate, which is fine, because I will give up, I will sacrifice accuracy for entertainment.
I
don't want to get my psychological conditions so right. strict that they're no longer entertaining.
Well, I guess what I would say is this, and I would put it kind of in the same realm that I would put physics or any other kind of continuity in a setting, that I agree with what Mike's saying, that a little knowledge is dangerous, partially for the quote-unquote med student's disease of you hear a few facts and suddenly think you have it.
But also everybody's an expert.
The bigger thing I'd worry about is everybody's an expert, that you hear a few facts on here and suddenly think that these conditions that are actually very complicated and very, you know, difficult to deal with can suddenly be boiled down to a soundbite that we gave on Fear the
no,
Boot.
No. Take the soundbite, then go to Wikipedia and then become experts.
Right. But the thing that I would say is this, that when I play a role-playing game, I accept a certain suspension of disbelief about the physics, about the magic, about whatever, but I want enough consistency and enough anchoring in reality that I can make sense of the game. That if I tried to run a role-playing game where we had to accurately represent round squares, none of us could play the game because it's just an idea that is nonsense to our reality. And that's kind of an extreme example, but the point is that it'd be nice to see people get close enough that, okay, this has some rooting in reality, this has some believability. And I also say that because I think in many ways, realism, once you understand it, is more exciting than fiction. That I think once you understand things like the Doolittle Raid, that's more exciting than blowing up the Death Star is. Once you really understand Ooh. What went into that.
That's a strong analogy, Dan.
That was a strong analogy, and that may solicit some email. Be sure to send those all to adam@feartheboot.com.
Thank you.
But
that was so strong, nice. We even woke John up over there.
I know.
Hey, now.
I pulled John out of his narcoleptic slumber. The point being that, you know, I think that would add something to the game.
And that was the correct use of narcolepsy, by the way.
Yes, thank you. If it wasn't...
I probably have it in that med student way, because I fall asleep all the time. But whatever.
But the point is, if it's not like, you know, you go through traumatic experience, roll percentile dice, and you have a fear of boats, or multiple personalities is suddenly just portrayed in this cartoonish way. So
I think you and I are driving at the same balance, only from different directions.
Yeah, maybe so.
And I would like to take this in a different spin, too, of there are some things that if you try to play them in a role-playing game, it's going to be nothing but cheesy, and you have they have absolutely no place in a role-playing game.
All right, Mike, let's start with
I really am afraid of boats.
Mike, do you want to start with the big conditions or the little conditions?
I don't care. Hit me.
Okay, let's start with the big ones, then.
Okay.
Psychosis.
Okay.
Define psychosis. And explain kind of generally what psychosis actually looks like.
I didn't bring any books with me, so the definition will be the Mike version.
That's fine.
But long and short, psychosis is when someone has a break from reality, when they can no longer tell fact from fiction in some way.
Okay, explain that.
Okay, maybe
give me some examples.
Okay, maybe I believe that I'm the baby Jesus and my mother abducted me because I'm the Messiah.
Well, if you believe that, I agree with you.
Maybe I believe I am Satan and, you know, I'm going to bring about the end of the world. Mm-hmm. Maybe I hear the voice of my dead uncle. Never mind, he's in California and alive and well. And my uncle tells me to, you know, he tells me I'm no good. He tells me I'm worthless. Maybe I see severed limbs with blood oozing out of them all over the house. Those would all be instances of psychosis.
How does this affect a person socially? Let's say we're not talking role-playing games, but we're talking about role-playing games, so let's apply it to a role-playing game. But in real life, how would this affect someone in terms of how they relate to society and how they relate to a group of people? And the application of role-playing games, if I'm trying to play a psychotic in a role-playing game...
This is one of those things that has no place in role-playing games, unless it's very, 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 very light. Because it can't be done unless it's cheesy or annoying or it would not
no
have
place in a role playing game from a PC perspective.
Yeah, can you explain why?
Because if
could a psychotic not be a member of an adventuring group?
Yeah, would a psychotic NPC add value to a game? Do you think
it depends on how far gone you are? Because there are people who just have minor psychosis. I guess psychosis is not in itself a diagnosis except psychosis not otherwise specified. But
right, just like neurosis is a category, but right,
right. Well, I think it tends to be done cheesy. Maybe it doesn't have to be done cheesy, but it tends to be done cheesy. My guy's crazy, and so he can do whatever I want him to do, even though it doesn't make any sense because he's crazy.
Right, but I've seen that. Yes. I'm saying from like a non-player character perspective, though. Like, so you're saying that from a player character's perspective, it's usually abused?
I would say it would be hard to not abuse it. If you used it in your character and did not abuse it,
we have all at one point picked chaotic neutral just so we could do everything and not be accountable for it.
I will have to say that the vast majority of times I've seen people play insane characters, they very much pick and choose, number one, the manifestation of the insanity, and number two, the timing of the insanity.
And it tends to be cheesy.
Yeah.
They want attention. The focus isn't on them.
Right.
Or, they think it would be funny or whatever else.
But when it actually comes to the point where it matters, or whatever.
They have a moment of clarity.
They can hold
suddenly
it together
they
when
have a
fight.
Moment of clarity.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
in the middle of a brawl, suddenly the voices are silent.
I think if you're going to do something like that, you have to completely hand it over to the GM. Because the GM's going to screw you at every opportunity, which you should be.
Yeah.
And under those circumstances, I think it might be able
all right,
to be done.
Let's talk about...
But then it's going to be a game breaker for the other player characters.
Probably.
Okay. Multiple personality disorder. Someone actually, in fact, I think this was John Scooter, actually brought this up on the forum.
Nice.
All right.
First of all, multiple personality disorder, now called dissociative identity disorder, people wonder if it even exists because it's extremely, extremely rare. It's extremely overdiagnosed. And oftentimes people will try to present as having multiple personalities when they don't because they have personality problems or something else.
Are you kidding? Have you ever lived with a woman?
Exactly my point. That is not multiple personalities.
That's called...
Can you explain in more detail? Why do they think it does not exist? How would they re-diagnose someone who they previously thought had multiple personality disorder?
That's going to get too complicated. I don't know if I can get into that because that would be...
Can you give us even a 30-second...
It's extremely, extremely rare, for one thing. I mean, okay. Extremely rare. Less than 1% of the population by far. We're talking extremely rare. However, it's diagnosed too often because people try to mimic the symptoms because it's one of the people... It's everybody's favorite. If you're crazy, you've watched Sybil in the 70s or 80s or whenever
right.
it was at Sally Field was that woman with 400
right.
personalities. And so you want to be crazy, too, and you want to get attention or whatever else.
Right.
And so you want to have multiple personalities.
Or, I've seen this. The other one is that they want to turn social mass and social personas into multiple personalities. That I'm playing the chick who is normally nice and sweet, but every so often, Blood Rose comes out. Well, and then she goes crazy and puts on her S&M wear and gets out her whip. And
I hear a lot of, I have different facets to my personality. Well, who doesn't? That doesn't mean you have multiple personalities. You know, well, I get in a bad mood and then I turn into a jerk. I'm Jekyll and Hyde. No, that does not mean you have multiple personalities.
Right.
And very often that's what I hear, but that doesn't mean you have multiple
personalities. Would you also agree that a lot of people who claim to have multiple personalities, in fact, invent those as a way of dealing with some kind of other stressor or trauma?
It happens, but be careful, because that can be how multiple personalities start. But, you know, in those rare instances, if they even do. But yes, I would absolutely say that it's invented. I mean, how else would you come up with it? Unless it's your moodiness, unless it's your different facets to your personality, how else is it going to get there other than fabrication?
Right.
Well, I think there's a level 7 cleric spell.
There's a level 1 mage spell, mirror image.
Ah.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
The guy who's shell-shocked from some horrible childhood experience or shell-shocked from being in a war.
This is the one you're going to get the most complaints about.
What should that actually look like?
Okay, that one can, I mean, all of these can be varied. I mean, you have to remember presentation can be, it varies a lot.
Right.
Based on individual experience.
Right, exactly.
I mean, this varies a lot.
I know we are boiling super complicated issues down to talking points. But
right, and then when I'm going to talk about symptoms here or whatever, or what people look like with post-traumatic stress disorder, remember, this is how you diagnose it, and yes, this means you have it if you have these things. No, don't do this.
Right.
That's going to cause
problems. And somebody's going to write us in who served in Vietnam and say, well, I have PTSD, and it's different for me, and blah, blah, blah.
Right. From Vietnam, you'll get Iraq.
Basically,
come on, Francis, write us in.
Yeah. Basically, post-traumatic stress disorder involves someone who has had a major traumatic event happen to them, probably life-threatening. And down the road, they start revisiting that. They have flashbacks, nightmares, intrusive memories, things they can't get away from of the event kind of haunting them. That's, in a nutshell, post-traumatic stress.
I have this.
So do I. I podcasted once and it was very hard on me.
It was terrible.
If you were going to play...
I played riffs.
If you were going to play this in an RPG...
Don't joke about that.
If you're going to play this in an RPG, how would you play this?
Post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yes. I think one of the biggest things I would see, and this is the same nitpick I had with the other conditions, is people seem to be awfully able to pick and choose when these symptoms manifest.
It would have to be subtle.
They have the nightmares at night, but when the guns actually start firing, it doesn't bother them.
Well, why would it?
Well, for example, there's a scene in the movie Glory where Matthew Broderick, they close a window and Matthew Broderick jumps because it's like a gunshot. That would not be PTSD because, first of all, it's happened too soon. And every day he's in the middle of gunfire, that would not necessarily be PTSD. What we're talking about is things that are down the road and that cause all diagnoses. It's things that cause clinical problems for you in your life. If you're a soldier on the front lines and you jump if you hear a window shut, that's a good thing because you need to be on your toes. So that would not be post-traumatic stress disorder. So I would say that in a role-playing game, if you wanted to have someone with post-traumatic stress disorder, we actually had that fairly recently, not to get into gaming stories.
Right.
But I would say, yeah, they could have intrusive memories. They could just be sitting in a chair, you know, on a plane ride or something, and all of a sudden they would remember, you know, back when the incident happened, or, you know, if some, God forbid, something would happen that would be kind of like the incident. Like, let's say, for example, I was in a car wreck a couple of years ago.
Right. Driving down that stretch of road.
Stretch of road was a problem for me for quite a while. It isn't anymore, but for quite a while, anytime I even went on a highway ramp, it was kind of freaked me out.
I'm the same way. I watched a man get killed on a motorcycle. The real me watched a man get killed on a motorcycle. And I don't know that I'd go so far as say I have PTSD, but to this day, every time I see a motorcycle on the road, I slightly relive that experience. I re-see that guy dying on that motorcycle, and I hit the brakes and back off and go three lanes over and get as far away from the guy as I possibly can. You know, and I realize it's not true PTSD, but the point is that there's still, you know, some kind of trauma that hangs over me.
Right. And that would be how it would manifest it probably in a role-playing game, is that you would experience some sort of anxiety when you got to something around, kind of along the same vein of the event that triggered your problem, that you might flash back to it or whatever. That would be sort of how it manifests in a nutshell, because again, the manifestation can be so varied.
Right. Let's say for a moment that we are talking about a role-playing game that someone out there is interested in going beyond these talking points we have given of basically saying that, okay, the popular images aren't quite right. And we've given a few talking points, but there's I mean, we could do a series on this and probably still not get to the end of it. So let's try to give some kind of a quick walkaway advice here. Let's say that I am interested in playing a character in a role-playing game who has a serious mental disorder, but at the same time, I'm not prepared to go to college and get multiple degrees.
Sure.
Where would you recommend I begin to try to really learn what this disorder is like so I can portray it correctly? And of course, I would say this isn't just role-playing games. If you're writing a novel or whatever, this exact same thing would apply. Where should I begin?
Well, I'm likely to get lynched at this table for saying this, but I would just read Wikipedia. because the only information you're going to need is what it looks like.
Right.
Hey, well, I tell you what, you're not going to get lynched at this table unless you cite it to me in an argument.
I'm not going to cite it to you in an argument.
Thank you.
But if you just want, you know, what this thing looks like and what people's perception is of the disorder, just look it up on Wikipedia.
Or like WebMD or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, something else that I have found that is helpful is go to support networks. And I'm not saying go and attend some local meeting, but I mean, hop online and look for websites that are dedicated to either people that suffer from these conditions.
I don't want to encourage that because, I mean, those people, like, for example, if we encourage gamers to go to PTSD things to learn about PTSD for your game, those people are trying to get over stuff. They've got serious hangups, serious issues they're trying to work out. And if we invade their work just to learn for
I'm
our
not talking.
Project.
No. Okay, let me re-clarify. I am not talking about crashing these communities. I'm not talking about joining these communities.
Okay,
not
a fight like club. Web thing.
Right, right.
Web resources or stuff
I'm
like that.
I'm not talking Fight Club or Harold and Maude. I'm not talking about showing up in these communities. What I'm saying is if you find these support networks, either for the people that have the condition or for family members and friends of people that have the conditions, and you read the stories they talk about, the real life stories, the things they have in common.
And those are going to be anecdotal.
They will be. And oftentimes, though, I've seen tirades, you know, where they'll say the things that people generally don't understand is that it actually is like this, this, and this. That also might be a good resource for coming up with some kind of, you know, a basis for it. And you say it's anecdotal, but actually in a strange sort of way, I think that may be helpful.
I don't.
Well,
games
well here's
anecdotal.
Why. Here's why. Because
games are anecdotal and
you're playing one character. So if you base that off of an anecdote, it's reasonable. Because you are playing one character.
And by
Except
your own...
would you play it the same way they would? And that's my problem with anecdotes, is that their manifestation of this issue is not going to be the same as yours, which is why if you go to Wikipedia or some generic information,
right,
and you read, this is what, you know, I'm having nightmares, intrusive memories, flashbacks to this traumatic event, I read that and I can interpret it my own way. That's going to put my own spin on it that I can tie to my character, that I can make more appropriate for gaming.
Right.
Whereas if I get somebody's anecdote of, you know, Harry was in Nam and he lost his foot and, you know, now he's always scared that shrapnel's going to be in the carpet or whatever.
Right.
You know, whatever crazy.
Well, and I think you can take it too far, but I was just going to say at the same time that I think if you read those anecdotes, the two things you might pick up is one, trends. And the second is you might even pick up these little bits and pieces, excuse the shrapnel pun, but you might pick up these little bits and pieces where it's like, you know what? That would be kind of, you can laugh at it, it's okay. That it would be kind of cool to say, you know, this is one little thing that would be kind of cool to work into my character, that, you know, this kind of a thing. And I see what you're saying, though. I see what you're saying, that the person you're reading on is anecdotal. They're working through an issue. They haven't mastered it. It's not your character.
And it's just one manifestation of the symptoms.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, but if you come around and say, this is how it is in my character, this is my take on it, you're automatically right. Because it's your character. It's your brain.
Right.
Right.
So
I don't know that accuracy on this stuff is all that important in a role-playing game, so long as it doesn't
get
obnoxious.
I would say it's not.
Right.
My major thing would be, don't make it too over the top. Don't make it too cheesy. And if you have psychological problems, try to leave them out of the game.
And I would add to that, don't make it too convenient. That's my biggest beef.
GM
oh,
control.
Yeah.
Is when people say, I want a psychological disorder, and then it's always convenient when it manifests.
Phil always takes a psychological disorder.
Big shot.
Yeah, big
it is
shot.
Convenient in manifesting in that it doesn't.
The one time I played a character,
but his ambidexterity manifests in every combat.
The one time I tried to play
around
a character who was truly psychotic, I tried to play it that way all the time. That he did things that, quite frankly, nearly got him killed on many occasions because there was no break to it. I mean, there was no.
That sounds tiring.
It was a hard character to play, but I don't know that I would necessarily go back and play the character again. because for many of the reasons we've talked about today that I don't think I got it quite right. It was very tiring to play. And at a lot of times you're about to sacrifice the party because guess what? You can't pick and choose that. Oh, I'm just not going to be crazy at this moment because it would be inconvenient. So,
well, and in the movies, these things are fun and interesting. In real life, they're not too much fun to live with.
Right.
So that's why, for the most part, it's not really that appropriate for gaming. It's not going to add to your character unless it's just little quirks and,
right,
you know, neuroses or whatever. If you're playing somebody who's depressed, boy, won't that be a great game, you know?
Right.
I'm quiet and I brood.
Exactly.
And think about myself.
I mean, an OCD might be fun. And
then you're playing vampire.
Probably not.
I'm playing Severus
okay,
Snape.
You know, I'm picking up trash. What are you
he
doing
does
next
more
round?
Than brood.
Picking up trash. I mean, no, not
right.
really.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I'll bet, actually, if we were to take a poll, that probably the vast majority of people listening to this podcast either are chronic or have at least at one point in their life periodically suffered some kind of emotional or mental disturbance.
Probably.
Of depression, anxiety, and maybe even something more serious. I mean, God forbid, I'm sure there are people listening to this that have some kind of post-traumatic stress disorder, have been molested or whatever, and understand what a day-to-day battle that condition really is, and understand why it may not always make for the best fodder in role-playing games. Once again, I mean, don't take it too far, because if you want to soak too much reality into your role-playing game, close the books and go outside. But, you know, I'm a big fan of having enough reality in there for there to be some consistency and some integrity to the storytelling of the role-playing game and the nature of the characters. So, any closing thoughts on this?
Can I do a PSA?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, who has advertising dollars? Pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies have lots of advertising dollars. So more often than not, when we see mental health treatment shown in media, what do we see? We see psychiatrists prescribing medications. Generally, psychiatrists in movies do everything, not just prescribe medications, but they do therapy and everything else.
And it's even worse in commercials.
Yeah, which, of course, most psychiatrists see you for 5 minutes, ask you a host of questions, prescribe you medication, and go on your merry way. The thing that you don't hear much about is therapy, because the advertising would have you believe that everything is a chemical imbalance and you need to go and take this pill and that it solves your chemical imbalance. Never mind that they show them that therapy does have an effect on brain chemistry. Look at Seligman if you want research, Seligman. Therapy does not have a very strong media presence. I don't see psychologists, except, you know, little mousy men like Freud sitting there and asking, tell me about your mother. You know, you don't see serious therapists out
right.
there doing good work. You see them being crackpots and
right.
charlatans. But the psychiatrists
crockpots?
Are always, huh?
Crockpots?
Crackpots.
Okay.
Maybe crockpots is what I said. I meant crackpots. But all I just want to make the point that media does not accurately portray mental health, and psychiatrists are not the end-all and be-all of mental health treatment. They'll just give.
You mean the media might be
bit.
Lying to me?
Yeah, well,
I don't believe
for
that.
Whatever
they'll dope you up.
For whatever it's worth, as a completely untrained, unqualified professional, non-professional rather, sitting here pontificating.
A professional non-professional.
Yeah, a professional
so
non-professional. That I will have to say that as a society, and I, like Mike, largely blame where the money is for this, that we've gotten to a point where we over-medicate ourselves without dealing with the real issues.
We want a quick fix.
Exactly.
Sure.
And it's easier to walk into a psychiatrist and to believe the Zoloft commercials that'll fix everything. And I'm not saying that doesn't have that its place. I mean, if you're truly psychotic, you probably need to be on meds. But at the same time, you know, don't discount the idea of therapy or actually, you know, getting to the real root of the issue and solving the problem in your thoughts rather than just trying to happy pill yourself back to normality.
Meds mask your symptoms and they work fast. That's why insurance companies like them, is they're a fast solution. They're very financially sound.
Right.
Therapy takes time.
So I completely agree with your PSA as a non-professional, but I am very glad that you were able to make it. So thank you guys for tuning in, and please do not forget to get out there and vote for the Ennies. We will have a link to that posted on our front page blog at feartheboot.com. We will also have a link to that in the announcement section of our forums, and we will probably make this available anywhere we can. Don't forget to get out there and vote for your favorite podcast. We hope that's us. If it's not, that's fine too.
Just Fear the Boot.
Get out there and rock the vote for Fear the Boot.
DLI.
Kick the boot.
And we will catch you guys next time.
Hopefully I'll see you later.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.